You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Support comes from the Pennsylvania Hemp Summit, November 14th and 15th, convening hemp industry stakeholders to learn, connect, and grow. Details at pahempsummit.com.
This is What Doesn't Kill You, Food Industry Insights. I'm your host, Katie Kiefer, and I have the very great pleasure of having one of my all-time favorite guests back on the show. His name is Art Cullen. Art is the Pulitzer Prize-winning editor and co-owner of the Storm Lake Times, Buena Vista County's hometown newspaper. Buena Vista County is in Iowa, people. We're talking to the heartland here. In 2017, Art was awarded his Pulitzer Prize for editorial writing. I follow him constantly on Twitter. His editorials often appear in the Washington Post and no doubt other newspapers as well. It's a great pleasure to have you back, Art. I really appreciate you coming on the show again and taking the time for me.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
So you had a great piece, one of many great pieces, about how essentially the farming community bites the hand that feeds it. So you pointed out that historically farmers do better under Democratic administrations, and yet for the last three or four presidential cycles, they consistently have voted Republican. So I wanted you to sort of explain that disconnect because, you know, their economics are almost always at least as good, if not better, than during Republican administrations. And yet during the Biden administration, for example, there's been a distinct uptick in income for a lot of farmers. So let's talk about, you know, why you think that disconnect exists and who's actually making bank.
Well, the disconnect may exist because of Iowa's history with the Republican Party. Senator Jonathan Tolliver, around the turn of the century, around 1900, between 1900 and the 1920s, said Iowa will go Democrat when hell goes Methodist. And then when Harold Hughes was elected governor of Iowa, he was a Democrat, first Democratic governor in a generation, and kind of started making Iowa purple. But, you know, the Farm Bureau has always controlled Iowa agriculture and politics, and it continues to today. And it's, you know, basically the bulwark of the Iowa Republican Party.
Wow. You know, I didn't realize that. I was not clued into the power of the Farm Bureau. That explains a lot. So, you know, you mentioned that a lot of farmers are making more money now than they have in past years. And I wondered who particularly is making that money. Is it the corn guys? Is it the soy guys? Is it the pig guys? Or is it some other lesser known factor?
Well, the people making the money are Smithfield Foods, which is owned. It's a subsidiary of a company owned out of Shanghai, which is essentially reports to the Chinese government.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's called the WH Wang
making money.
Group.
And yep. Bayer, which is a German concern, bought Monsanto, the seed and chemical provider, maker of Roundup,
yep,
herbicide. And so they're making money.
Yeah.
And the fertilizer dealers, including Koch Enterprises, are making money. And
right,
then you've got these farmers that are farming over 1,000 acres where land sells for $20,000 an acre.
Right.
And they're making money because they're too big to fail, and they're all plugged into that corn, pork, ethanol complex. And you can't operate outside that complex, but those people are making money. It's the bottom third of Iowa and Midwestern agriculture that are in a constant state of stress. They don't own the land, and
right,
and their expenses are higher and their rents are higher. But the big boys are making money. It's the little guys that aren't. And there's very few little guys left.
Yes, that is also true. And the big guys are also the guys that are buying the you know, that are lining the pockets of politicians to make sure that the status quo remains the status quo, I guess. So, I mean, it's there's nothing new about the story, except that it is a constant, surprise to me. I don't know why. I mean, you pointed out that the Trump administration bailed out pork, soybean, corn, and others to the tune of $16 billion, which I think, you know, somehow that kind of skated under the radar.
6-0, not 1-6, 6-0 billion.
Oh, come on. 60. I actually looked that up.
60 billion over a two-year period.
Right. Wow. Oh, yes. Okay. Right. Fair enough. And then, of course, they already get the very substantial farm bill subsidies that all of these big commodity farmers get.
Those were special trade subsidies, trade emergency subsidies that were sparked by the trade war that Trump imposed with China.
Right.
And to protect soybean growers primarily and pork producers.
Right.
Because we export about half of our pork goes to China.
Oh, yes, absolutely. One in every four pigs is owned by China already, right?
Through Smithfield.
So, yeah. Yeah. They got a big appetite for pork.
And so that was $60 billion over a two-year period in trade subsidies. And by contrast, the Biden administration is spending $3 billion on climate smart agriculture through the same program called the Commodity Credit Corporation.
Right. We're going to talk about that in a second. but those Biden ended those trade wars, essentially. I mean, trade has been resumed with China on these fronts. So these guys are making their exports just as they did prior to the Trump administration. But
and
do you
with
think,
Mexico and Canada, too.
That's right. Do you think, is it because he bailed out the farmers that is why Trump has managed to maintain his grip on the Republicans in that part of the world? Or is it just that, you know, I don't even know how to phrase this question.
I think what they did is they made a pact with the devil to get tax cuts.
Right.
Especially to get reductions in inheritance taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said, okay, you know, he may be trying to act like an authoritarian, but he's cutting taxes and not imposing any regulations on how I do business.
Right. Those seem to be, I mean, as you point out in numerous editorials, those seem to be sort of the driving thing. And the fact that the infrastructure is crumbling around them and the water is unfit to drink doesn't seem to deter the local residents from voting for those same people who are making sure that their infrastructure is crumbling and their water is unfit to drink because they won't raise taxes. I mean, it's, you know, the shooting oneself in the foot scenario in Iowa is kind of breathtaking, in my opinion. I mean,
we do stupid things
here, too, but gee whiz.
But when you're buying that land at $20,000 an acre, you've got to make every inch of it pay.
Yes.
And that's the mentality. Tells us to produce all out, fence row to fence row, and then through the fence row and into the ditch and into the river.
Yeah.
We're planting. And there's just no end to it.
Apparently not. I mean, you write a lot. I mean, one of the reasons I so enjoy your columns is because you are the only one who speaks truth to power. I mean, it's really unusual to see how forcefully you come out about these issues. And I know that you have paid a price for that in terms of support for your paper. I remember the last time we spoke, you were, addressing a sort of financial crisis because you had lost so many advertisers because of some of the positions you've taken in the local paper. I as an aside, is there any change in that? Are people starting to rally to your side?
Well, we're breaking even now. And as we come out of the pandemic, it seems like community newspapers nationwide, I pray, may have hit bottom in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And we've just got our nose above water now. But the year we won that Pulitzer Prize, We actually lost $70,000.
Oh my God. That's painful to see, but.
And that was before the pandemic.
Yeah, right, right.
2017.
Right. Well, you know, but I feel like those years also, like, every local newspaper was taking a hit, right? I mean, it wasn't just the Storm Lake Times, or do you feel like that was particularly a year in which, because of your Pulitzer Prize?
Six Iowa county seat newspapers closed that year in 2021, the pandemic.
Right.
Six Iowa newspapers closed just that year, county seat newspapers. And of course, newspapers were closing before then. I mean, there's about 300 news deserts in America where there, you know, these are towns of 20 to 30,000 people without any local news source of any kind.
Absolutely. We were just actually looking at a local paper here. I'm in the Northeast, and there was really no news in it. And the reason is because they don't have any money to hire reporters
exactly.
to do the news gathering that a local newspaper needs to do, like attending all
and
the
it's sort of a vicious cycle
meeting.
Because
yes.
rural communities are declining because of all this consolidation in rural America. They're also in decline. And so retail businesses on Main Street are a lot weaker than they were 40 or 50 years ago. And
yeah.
that's really eroded the business model of community newspapers.
That's right. Yeah. Anyway, let's go back to what we were talking about, because aside from how interesting that part is, what you mentioned, the partnerships for smart commodities, which I did a show with Tom Philpott from Mother Jones last week or a couple weeks ago. Anyway, and it is a huge giveaway to Mega Ag, right? I mean, it's like the number of partnerships with Corteva, Bayer,
Archer Daniels Midland,
Cargill. I mean, it was kind of breathtaking. Now, I understand that you can't really move forward without engaging those entities, but it was kind of astonishing how much money was in play. As you said, it's $3 billion, which compared to the trade subsidies or the emergency trade payments that the Trump administration okayed kind of pales in comparison. But still, it's a big chunk of money.
It's something. It's a start. It's a big start.
It's a big start. But it does seem to focus a lot on growing more corn. And I know you have some thoughts about that.
Yeah.
And there were a few projects that were going to, you know, help subsidize increasing pork production. Again, something that you have strong thoughts about. And then they talked a lot about the pipeline, or not a lot, but the pipeline, which Jesse Vilsack is sort of pushing along, which is supposed to capture carbon at ethanol plants, because it's really all about, I mean, many of the projects seem to be about supporting and producing even more ethanol, which we all pretty much know is not really the most efficient use of fuel, or the most efficient fuel product to make, in fact. So I wanted to talk a little bit about how, you know, what will the impact be on Iowa if corn production is even further, grown. I don't even know how to say this. But you know what I'm saying? Like, is expanding corn production, what is the impact of that going to be, given the state of topsoil, of water, et cetera, in Iowa?
Well, right now, the Great Plains is involved. It's in the midst of a 50-year mega drought,
right?
The likes of which haven't been seen in over 1,000 years. So corn production is you can barely grow corn in Kansas and some parts of Nebraska anymore. And because nights are getting warmer, it's becoming more difficult for to grow corn even with irrigation. And so there's a real challenge. And then in Iowa, which is, you know, the buckle of the Corn Belt, it's going to be difficult to grow corn in southern Iowa in 30 to 35 years. And one of the top climate agronomists in the world, a guy by the name of Gene Tackley, who just retired from Iowa State University, expects that our corn yields are going to decline by up to 30% back to 1980s levels. Wow. Despite all the advances in technology and plant science, he's seeing us our yields declining by a third here in Iowa.
And he attributes that to but the fact that nights are warm, in other words, climate change and drought conditions?
Yes, and soil degradation.
And soil degradation, right, of course. So
we're growing corn on a petrochemical base right now. And, you know, that is not sustainable going into the future. You have to have sufficient water, and the soil holds water, and you have to have the right temperatures and environmental conditions to grow that corn.
Right.
And everything in the Midwest is predicated on corn.
When you say everything, what do you mean? Like the entire sort of industrial complex?
Exactly.
Is that what you're saying? Like
exactly. There are 3,000 meat cutters in Storm Lake, Iowa, a town of about 10,000 to 15,000 people. There are 3,000 meat cutters here, and all of that starts with a kernel of corn.
Sure. Of course it does. Wow. I didn't realize you had a big plant there. Is that a Smithfield plant?
Tyson. And Tyson. So we have about 90% of our elementary school are children of color, sons and daughters of immigrants.
Mm-hmm. Right. That in itself is another entire conversation.
Right.
So this is why I love you. What about that carbon capture pipeline, which I think has gotten a little bit of pushback from people who don't especially want it running through their property, including large farms? What is the status of that? Are you plugged into that story?
Well, yeah, it's coming through our neighborhood, and it's going to come through, and there's nothing anybody can do to stop it, really, before the Iowa Utilities Board. The skids are greased. The Utilities Board has never met a pipeline it didn't like, whether shale oil or natural gas or whatever.
Right.
And so... And the entire political establishment in Iowa is, of course, vested in ethanol. And so these pipelines are serving these ethanol plants that are huge CO2 emitters because they're boiling corn. And that takes a lot of energy. And they're also huge water consumers, 3 gallons of water for every gallon of ethanol produced.
No, that's never a statistic I've read or heard. I've heard that it takes a gallon and a half of energy or fuel to produce a gallon of ethanol. That I've heard, but the water, woo!
And it takes 5 gallons a day to water a hog, by the way.
Right.
And our hog populations are continuing to grow. And again, that's a whole nother topic. But the carbon pipelines are going to happen, and because that's just the way things are wired. And there have been a lot of protests, and a lot of people are getting organized, and there's been litigation.
Yeah.
And we've seen it time and again, and it's all going to go for naught, and the pipeline will get built. Now, as long as we're pumping, as long as we're, through federal and state policies, supporting the distillation of corn into ethanol and cranking out all this CO2, I suppose it makes some sense that if you're going to be doing that, you might as well capture some of it and bury it under this ground in this Rube Goldberg scheme.
Right.
but, you know, as you were referring to earlier, it seems like you got to buy off the ethanol, corn, pork lobby to get anything done going forward. You're going to have to pay ADM and Cargill and Smithfield and JBS, you're going to have to pay them all up front to jump on board. And
right.
That's what's going on.
Right, right. Exactly. It's like they're dangling the carrot instead of beating them with the stick.
Because
no regulations, right?
You can't beat them with a stick. Mm-hmm. The Iowa Supreme Court and the U.S. Court of Appeals have been pretty consistent that you just simply can't regulate agriculture.
Yeah. Right. All right. We have to take a short break with Art Cullen. Please stay tuned. We'll be talking more about the politics of Iowa in the next segment. We'll be right back.
Support comes from the Pennsylvania Hemp Summit. Join us for the Pennsylvania Hemp Summit trade show and reception at the Farm Show Complex in Harrisburg on November 14th and 15th. Connect with industry stakeholders and grow the industry together through our 2023 industry planning sessions, industry and legislature panel discussions, success story sharing, professional development workshops, and a research showcase. Register to attend or get involved by exhibiting or sponsoring. Details at pahempsummit.com.
Okay, so let's talk politics. You have coming up for re-election, you have Governor Kim Reynolds, who, you know, for people who are not following this, is a Trump-supporting, election-denying radical. And then you have Chuck Grassley, who is 88 years old.
That sounds about right.
And who, if the evidence is to believe from the January 6th committee, was all in on stealing the election. But it sounds like they may prevail, despite what you described at the top of the show as the sort of gradual purpling of your state. What explains that?
Well, Iowa was purple, so was Ohio. And what's happening in each state is that the elites in D.C. and the East Coast and West Coast essentially have abandoned Appalachia and the Rust Belt. And
yes,
the resentments are so huge. And of course, then the spin machine says, well, it's the Latino that's taken your job. Well, no, nobody, no Anglo really wants to go in and slice 15,000 hogs a day.
No.
And there's actually a job at Tyson called the bunghole cutter.
Mm-hmm.
And do you want to do that? No. You want to send your kid off to college. Well, so anyway, what they've done is they've turned all this animus toward immigrants to hide the fact that they've just gutted rural America. And if you're in Youngstown, Ohio, you know, what did Barack Obama do for you? What did Donald Trump do for you? What did any of them do for you?
Right.
And nothing. And that's why people attack the Minnesota state capitol, the Michigan state capitol, and eventually the U.S. state capitol. It all started here. And it's with this incredible frustration as people see their prosperity slip away and their future slip away, and there's no way out of Butcher Holler.
Right. Well, I don't I don't disagree with you, but you did write an editorial about a guy named Mike Franken who's running against Grassley, and he thinks he can beat him. Why does he think that? Like, how is he? Is he subsidized by industry the way Grassley is?
No, Franken. Franken, like Tim Ryan in Ohio, is being ignored by Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, and Gary Peters of Michigan, the Democratic Senate Campaign Committee Chair, as they always do, because they think it's unwinnable. And so they want to pour their money into Pennsylvania and Florida and Georgia, whatever.
Right.
And again, they're flying over the industrial Midwest and telling you're on your own, buds. And then they wonder why people don't vote for Democrats.
Right. I guess. I don't know about that. I mean, I'm not.
Oh, and also, I might
clear
add
about that.
Mike Franken had the bad judgment to kiss a woman on the lips without her consent, and that might have torpedoed him.
Ooh, that's an unfortunate mistake. You know, Tim Ryan had a huge piece about several editorials about Tim Ryan in the papers today, in the Northeast, both the New York Times and the Washington Post. Jennifer Rubin especially wrote a great article about, like, Democrats should take notice of what Tim Ryan is doing, because he took down J.D. Vance in a way that was so breathtakingly simple and effective, that it was like, we should all be doing that. And it was, you know, hanging Trump around his neck, but also like, you let this man rob you of your dignity. And then you got right back up on stage and shook his hand. I mean, it's hard to come back from that.
Well, I hope Chuck Schumer was reading it.
Yeah, me too. What about Kim Reynolds? Who are her biggest donors? Why is she? I mean, you know, you would think, given that Iowa supports reproductive rights to a certain extent, I guess, even though she has just struck them down, or the Supreme Court did, but she's following right along. You know, who are her biggest donors? The same old, same old?
Well, yeah, to be the you know, the same, you know, the Koch network, you know, the basic American Legislative Exchange Council types, you know, who knows where all the money comes from.
Right. Thank you, Supreme Court.
She, you know, is in Trump's tight embrace.
Yeah.
And, you know, Trump won Iowa handily. And
yes.
Again, it's because of that rage that nobody is paying attention to. And Kim Reynolds plays right into it. And her first ad featured Cori Bush as her opponent, not Deirdre DeGeer, and talking about how defunding police is the agenda of the Democrats. And, you know, Cori Bush is from St. Louis, not Des Moines.
Right.
And so it's the same old playbook.
Yes, immigrants are bad. Crime is on the rise.
The last poll I saw, she was up by 15 points over DeGeer because, again, the Democratic Party said, well, DeGeer can't win. She's black and she's a woman. So let's just cast her off on her own and see. And so they're going to lose miserably. And because the Iowa Democratic Party is completely dismembered in Iowa.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
It's because of it's because of a complete lack of support from DC.
Really? And you think in the state that, you know, has the Iowa caucuses and
which they're trying to kill, and they'll be effective at killing. So you're losing rural America in spades. What's your first action? Kill the Iowa caucuses and don't fund Tim Ryan.
Right. I hope you've been writing to Chuck Schumer.
Chuck Schumer does not read the Stormlight Times pilot.
He should be. I'm going to start sending it to him. Fortunately, I'm no longer a New York State resident. But anyway, let's talk a little bit about, you know, there is, you know, even you acknowledge that there is some change in local attitudes.
And by the way, who owns Chuck Schumer? Wall Street.
Of course. Well, that goes without saying for any New York politician. I mean, it is what it is.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's okay. You're welcome to interrupt me. I'm often just maundering along in a kind of semi-senile way. So, you know, but, you know, the same old message, which Iowa, you know, has gobbled up because of the complex that we have been talking about. I'm just wondering, like, if Reynolds does not offer any alternatives to the fouled water, the loss of, you know, farm land to large concerns and so on, the fact that Iowans can't really afford to farm unless they're part of the complex. Why are people still, I mean, are we going back to the rage factor here? Doesn't some of this social, environmental, economic damage register?
That's why the wedge issues are so important. Abortion, you know, despite the vote in Kansas, you know, abortion is a key issue in Iowa, and I'm not sure how it'll play in the midterm elections. But it's not the same as Iowa's not the same as Kansas, and neither is rural Minnesota. It's very pro-life, and
right.
And again. That's something that's not well understood. And so I don't think it's a net, it's going to be the net plus, perhaps, that people think it would be after Kansas.
Huh.
And they've been winning elections based on abortion and gun control and taxes for my entire adult lifetime. That's not changing.
No, it's not. And what's interesting to me about seeing that, and it's not, and Iowa is not unique in this way, but the idea that, your right to have clean water, clean air, breathable air if you live near a hog farm, all of these environmental impacts that are really stacking up in a huge way in your state and throughout the Farm Belt, those issues don't register in the same way. And I'm wondering why Democratic candidates aren't able to make those cases as compelling as pro-life, no taxes, pro-gun.
Well, because they're all funded by the corporate structure. Look, the Biden administration joined the National Pork Producers and the American Farm Bureau Federation in trying to strike down Proposition 12.
I know.
In California, which sets minimum standards for space in livestock confinement buildings, hog confinement buildings.
Right.
And so the Biden administration is siding with the Farm Bureau because the Biden administration is plugged into the whole same complex. And so, the Democratic and Republican parties are both feeding at the same trough.
That is true. Yeah. All right. Well, why don't we talk for a second about the water issues in Iowa for people who aren't that familiar? What do you see are the biggest, the Raccoon River, of course, I've done tons of shows around. But what about the rest of Iowa?
Well, the Raccoon River, by the way, a year ago was named one of the nation's 10 most endangered rivers by the American Rivers Project.
Well, I'm surprised it's not a Superfund site. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. and I think the Mississippi was this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Jeez.
And, the surface water quality issues in Iowa are not improving, despite what Iowa calls a voluntary nutrient reduction program. The dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico, it's a oxygen deprivation from too much nitrogen flowing down the Mississippi River from Illinois and Iowa into the Gulf of Mexico. It's
right,
killing
right.
The shrimping industry so we can grow 200 bushels of corn per acre.
Yeah.
That's not getting better.
Right.
And there's all these voluntary incentives, but none of them really pay. None of them really pay a farmer a profit for planting, say, a cover crop in the winter to reduce soil erosion and nitrogen loss. None of these things really pay, and because nobody really wants them to. Because it's not really making Bayer any money or Corteva.
Well, you would think actually that planting cover crops would make them some money because they have to sell the seed for that. They've got to sell the chemicals.
They don't control the seed for that.
I see.
It's not hybrid. It's not genetically modified. Grass is tough to patent.
Yeah. yeah, but alfalfa, oats, I mean, they, a lot of these guys, certainly in the Northeast, are growing.
Yeah, but it's not like corn and soybeans where you have Roundup Ready corn and beans and, and also cover crops cut your herbicide use by 75%.
Yeah, so nobody wants that.
Nobody wants that.
Right.
And because everybody's plugged into that system.
Yes. Thank you for clarifying that in a way that cannot be denied. Art, you have a much bigger picture view of things than I think most of us do, certainly than I do. We should probably wrap it up here because I know my guy has another show right after us. But I want you to take this moment to promote the Storm Lake Times. Tell people how they can read your editorials on a regular basis and find out more about what you're doing.
You can go to stormlake.com, and that's our website for the Storm Lake Times pilot. And also, I'd encourage you to Google the Western Iowa Journalism Foundation. It's a nonprofit foundation that accepts donations, tax-deductible donations, to support rural, independent, family-owned newspapers in Western Iowa, including ours. And it's become more important than ever that we, as our advertising franchise erodes, that we raise money through other means, and we need your help.
Absolutely. So pay attention,
people. Western Iowa Journalism Foundation.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time today, Art. I really appreciate it. It's
Thank
always
you,
a joy,
Kate.
And a pleasure. We'll talk to you again soon, maybe right after the midterms.
I hope so.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to get your postmortem on it. So thanks for this today. I appreciate it. And thanks to our sponsors, as always, for supporting the network. See you next week, folks.
What Doesn't Kill You, Food Industry Insights, is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.